Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another guest interview. I've been loving doing these. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to follow this podcast on Instagram at icebreaker.podcast. Check out icebreakerpodcast.card.co. And as a heads up, I had to split this episode into two parts so it'd be easier for you all to listen. Ruping was a wonderful guest to have, and he was very well researched. Check him out on Instagram at Ruping Yukiyama and his nonprofit at Climate Ingenuity. Let's get into the episode. Hi guys, today we have a guest interview with Ruping Yukiyama, the founder of the new youth-led nonprofit Climate Ingenuity, who was recently accepted to Aspen Institute's Future Leaders Climate Summit in May. He is also leading multiple policy-focused initiatives through his nonprofit relevant to this episode's topic. Today we will be discussing the need to expand solutions-based climate education. Before we get started with this interview, I wanted for my audience to get to know you better. So let's start off with a sort of spontaneous icebreaker. So if you could make a playlist based off of your life, what would the playlist be called?
I could make a playlist based on my life, like a playlist, like a name for the playlist.
Yeah.
Resilience. I think I actually have my own playlist called that. It's just one word, resilience, and in a way that's honestly kind of undescribable. I just put tracks in there that make me feel that way and remind myself like of how everyone I know who really knows me has praised me for how resilient I am in terms of how much I've overcome my personal life to get up to this point. So yeah.
Is there like a specific genre or is it everything?
I think mostly soundtracks. Some of them are movie soundtracks and some of them are just like composers like the Italian pianist Ludovico Einaudi. So
cool. Well, okay, so now let's get into the actual episode. Can you tell us more about your environmental background and why you decided to found Climate Ingenuity?
So I've been determined to maximize my impact on the world since I was very young. And since high school, I wanted to go into politics or policy in some form. So I graduated high school in the class of 2018. So when I was already in college, in 2019, like a lot of people, was inspired by Greta Thunberg and what she was doing around climate during that time. And it all came to a head for me back then in December of 2019, around the time that the Australian wildfire crisis was really out of hand. There was a definitive moment for me when I realized a lot of the stake here, this is the cause I'm going to dedicate myself to go all in on. This is what I'm going to be passionate about, and this is going to be my life's work for moving forward. So I would say my climate journey started there, but it wasn't until 3 months later when I stumbled into an event talk at my college campus pre-COVID that really marked the beginning of my climate policy journey, where I really found that within the climate space, policy was what I wanted to really focus on. And throughout my time away from school, like, you know, like during the 2020 period of COVID and whatnot, I really found and continued to strengthen my passion for climate policy. But the thing was that between December 2019 and June of 2021, when I founded Climate Ingenuity or CI, there was this big 18-month iteration period where I really wanted to make this big difference in some way on climate, and I didn't really know what that looked like, and I just kept trying things and get involved in this initiative, try my own project, whatnot. And I would say that 80% or more of those ideas didn't work, but it wasn't wasted time, because it was through that iteration period that I was able to find my unique voice and style to being a change maker in this field. And one of those experiences highlights those experiences happened to be being a U.S. delegate for MOCOP 26, which was an online youth-led conference in November 2020, intended to make up for COP 26, the real one at the time that got postponed the following year. And throughout that 18-month period, I really developed and honed in on really deeply observing, deep observation of climate issues, especially pertaining to the youth climate space. And eventually in the spring of last year, I got backed in a corner with some things, you know, difficult life circumstances, didn't get an internship, etc. And had some promising ideas that I felt like warranted starting my own nonprofit. And that's the direction I decided to go with. And I was also compelled by this quote I saw on social media from this YouTube channel I've been a big fan of called Pursuit of Wonder, which said that for every idea that isn't tried, shared, or put together well enough, an entirely different world is aborted, doesn't happen. So with that in mind, I really decided to give CI the best of my attention and see where it could go. And since then, the initial ideas I had for an EV, like an electric vehicle policy proposal, turned into a proposal me and my former team later, we branded to Aloha America, and we submitted that last November to this initiative called the Youth Climate Action Challenge, which was supported by the World Economic Forum. And the initial policy resources that I compiled on my own under the theme for my nonprofit, which is providing resources for changemakers, that initial policy resources Google Doc became what I'll talk about later in this episode, something I call the Climate Policy Resource Stockpile. And my observations, and which continue to this day to some extent, on the youth issues that we're facing on climate became the foundational pieces for an initiative for climate ingenuity that I'll be working on a lot more in the long term once I have like the nonprofit fundamentals covered. My observations on those issues became the foundation for something I call a youth climate bill. And I would say getting involved and critical thinking were the top keys to my progression in the last two or so years on climate. And in terms of why I founded Climate Ingenuity, more on that. And similar to what I said regarding the Pursuit of Wonder quote, I knew that if I took no action, despite knowing that I could start my own nonprofit in this way, no one was going to do it for me. And my promising ideas across all fronts would have just kind of just sat there, and you know what I mean? And then I had my dissatisfactions with what I felt like the climate space or climate movement was lacking or not doing well enough. And I realized that starting my own would be an opportunity to start leading by example, you know? And then it would also be an opportunity to bring distinct values that I have into the climate space, such as, without going through the detail on these yet, policy prioritization, climate foresight, etc. And it really felt like something that my entire previous background in general set me up for, from a leadership standpoint, from the perspective I've been gaining through deep observation on these common issues, my passions, critical thinking, creativity, etc.
Yeah. Your background is actually super similar to mine. I got very interested with Greta Thunberg and the Australian wildfires, and I love that quote you said by the state of wonder. But
Pursuit of Wonder.
The Pursuit of Wonder, my bad. But following that, what is climate ingenuity? What do you do in CI? And why do you think this is making a difference?
Yeah, climate ingenuity, CI, my nonprofit's mission is to raise ambition and assertiveness on the climate crisis to deliver much needed lasting systemic change. There's three interconnected focus areas, all intended to help reduce, directly or indirectly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Running policy campaigns, helping elect the right climate champion political candidates, and providing resources for changemakers at all levels, whether they're policymakers or students or anyone in between. And your second question is like, why? What was your second question? It was
It was, how does this help relate to climate education?
Yeah, well, I mentioned the compost removal stockpile earlier. That is, it's a compilation of nearly 200 climate policy educational resources spanning 12 categories like books, publications, courses, articles, etc. And in terms of the resources category that CI is about, that is, the CPRS stockpile is the most comprehensive resource set that I've compiled, but the thing about it is that I can think of endless ways to, you know, apply it and get it out to people and have people use it to help reduce greenhouse gas emissions, whether they're a policymaker or whether they're a student using it for research purposes, etc. But that's not going to happen if no one knows about it, right? So that's the other component of the resources fund for CI, is really figuring out and working towards how do I and whoever I bring in for a position I'm currently recruiting for, content director, how do I and that person in the near term work together towards bringing for that publicity on the stockpile, and making sure that this is a term that you'll hear quite often in the climate space. How do we roll out that solution, deploy that solution, no matter how creative it is, at scale, so like widely? You see what I'm saying? So
within this, what specifically does expanding solutions based on climate education entail?
Yeah, in my view, expanding solutions based climate education, which, by the way, I'm going to use interchangeably here with the term climate policy education, because that's one of the best forms, if not the best form, of solution-based climate education, in my opinion. What expanding climate policy education means, in my view, is a handful of things. One is promoting the best systemic solutions, not, you know, just individual ones like recycling or flying less, etc. You know, the ones you know what I'm talking about. I would say focusing less, like amount and percentage-wise, on the science and more directly on the solutions that actually directly help reduce greenhouse gas emissions, first and foremost. It means using the best and most recent information or intel on what separates the most effective solutions from ones that don't make as big of a difference towards reducing emissions or towards solving climate change. It means emphasizing, the term I said before, I'll say it here again, policy prioritization, which is, in short, it basically means that some policies, climate policies, are way better than others. And the thing about policy prioritization is that it is, out of all the climate policy books I've read since joining the space back in late 2019, early 2020, every single one of those books has in some form or another indirectly mentioned the importance of climate policy prioritization. They phrase it differently in ways such as key actions in key sectors, go for the gigatons, focus first on top emitting countries and sectors, etc. But they all mention it. So it's really something that is not talked about enough, but needs to be really thoughtfully, intentionally, and deliberately incorporated into any effective climate policy or solutions-based climate education curriculum or program or whatever or whatnot. And lastly, expanding climate policy education means teaching people how to actually apply their knowledge. So just for some examples, because it's not the same thing. Learning about climate policy in a classroom setting or just through reading and whatnot is not the same thing as actually knowing how to apply it in the real world when you're asked to, right? Or when the situation calls for it. Some examples for how to actually apply climate knowledge, climate policy, include but not limited to project-based learning, paid climate internships, etc.
So You talked about using policy over science, so choosing solutions over science specifically. So why is education and policy-based solutions so crucial in promoting climate action?
So why is education so crucial in promoting climate action?
Yeah.
So it matters significantly because in it lies the opportunity to elevate the youth generation to be part of systemic solutions to the problem of climate change. And it will help tackle one of the root causes of climate anxiety, which is of course so prevalent in our generation. And on the flip side, failing to expand it at scale would be doing a really big disservice to young people everywhere. And I looked into this a bit prior to this conversation and pulled up some numbers, some research findings on the subject. And it all goes to show that right now what's offered isn't good enough by any measurement, meaning that the education system needs significant overhaul to really deliver effective and solutions-based climate education. So Teach the Future initiative based in the United Kingdom found that 79% of secondary teachers feel like they're not teaching climate in a meaningful and relevant way. 70% of teachers feel they have been trained well enough to teach about climate. A meager 4% of students, I'm presuming secondary students, so that means like high school and before that, right? Feel they know a lot about climate. And in contrast, 68% of students want to learn more about the environment in general. They didn't specify climate, but of course that's climate's part of that. Furthermore, a global survey by a youth-led nonprofit in the US called the Effective Climate Action Project from last summer found that 80% of youth are somewhat or not at all satisfied with the quality of their climate curriculums. And from last fall, this is from the Pearson Global Learner Survey, which surveyed 5,000 young people aged 16 or older in 5 countries, including the United States. 88% of those surveyed believe schools have a responsibility to teach students about climate issues. And 84% report taking action in their own lives to reduce their personal impact on the environment after being educated on climate issues. So that's a lot in terms of the numbers aspect. But from a personal standpoint, I really found that because I'm 21 years old. If I chose to continue with college, I would have under like a normal path. I would be graduating in the spring. Climate is noticeably absent from close to all, at least in the U.S. and Canada, undergrad environmental programs, but it's not really clear what the root cause of those issues are. With the Youth Climate Growth Initiative I mentioned earlier, CI will definitely be looking to find out what those root causes are and to you know, of course, be able to inform a proposal on how to address these issues. But I personally found through looking through numerous different college course catalogs and what majors they offer and the websites, etc. on this that, and like follow this please closely. So environment in general is not offered enough in college. The majority of what is offered about the environment in college is not about climate. The majority of climate courses cover the physical science, not really the solutions of how they work. So very little policy, or very limited policy. And the solutions that are covered don't appear to be aligned with the latest information or intel about which ones are most effective. So I haven't heard basically any mention about policy prioritization or about how electronic everything is the best solution, or what separates mandatory versus optional climate policies, solutions, etc. And that all goes back to a theory I personally have about the subject, which is, even though of course like it'll be a while before I, on behalf of CI, will have a chance to be able to confirm this theory, which is that I get the strong sense that these undergrad environmental programs that have all these flaws to them are mostly obsolete and were designed 20 plus years ago. And you may ask, well, why does that matter? Like, why is that an issue? And it's an issue because, in contrast, out of 200 climate policy, nearly 200 climate policy resources that I personally was able to find, climate policy educational resources that I was able to find, the ones that I was able to put into the stockpile based on my own criteria for it, there were 59 books and publications out of those 200 books and publications. And I did an inventory a while back on those resources, and out of the 59 book publications, 86% were published in the last 5 years. So do you see the disconnect there? Do you see the disconnect between, it appears like a lot of these programs are outdated, but in reality, all of this information, or a huge chunk of the latest information about what the best climate solutions are very recent.
That's very interesting. And I find it kind of, I don't know what the phrasing is, but there's definitely a separate distance between what should be done and what isn't being done with climate education and climate literacy, because it's so important for universities and schools and colleges and educational institutes as a whole to integrate curriculum that relates to the current climate and ecological crisis with the science, but also focusing so much on solutions to allow our youth to be informed and empowered to address the urgency of the crisis. And I think it does definitely help combat this climate anxiety, because information is power, right? So going off of this, what is your personal definition of climate literacy?
I would say it's multi-pronged. It involves enough understanding of the science to know the situation is dire, requires immediate action at scale, affects people unequally, so the equity and justice part, and that we have less time, even less time to act on it than we think because of tipping points. Being climate literate means understanding principles of systemic climate solutions and being able to teach them to others in a way that, in a sense, like helps you learn too, or reinforce your incumbent understanding on these topics. So for example, what separates mandatory versus optional policies? What is policy prioritization? Why is it important? What rising stringency is, or some people call it continuous improvement solutions are, and why that matters. It understands a lot, and more on the equity theme, the importance of addressing what Bill Gates calls the green premium and delivering a just transition. The green premium is, it basically means that the cost of climate friendly solutions is usually more than the incumbent default fossil fuels that power the grid and power cars and stuff like that. Furthermore, being climate literate, in my view, means being able to recognize and counter climate denial and delayism tactics. And also, this might be a little surprising, but also it means understanding the main barriers to effective coordinated climate action and the solutions needed to overcome them. So for example, some of those are included but not limited to national self-interests, the influence of the fossil fuel industry, the fact that all effective policies or solutions that politically speaking are politically difficult, optional policies, free riding, you know, bad politicians, etc. And I think going back to why climate education matters in our age, I really want to emphasize that this is a time-sensitive issue, because we as young people need and deserve to be part of the broader solution before it's too late. When I say before, it's, I mean like the 2030 emissions deadline for cutting global emissions in half, so etc. So expanding solutions-based climate education or policy education really can't wait any longer. And And there is a the relevant quote from this great book I read last year called Code is Calling. Code is Calling by Ryan Holiday. And there's a part in one of the chapters in which Ryan says, Douglas MacArthur, World War II General, U.S. World War II General, summed up all failures of life in two words. You know what those two words were?
I don't.
Too late. And in the book context, in like a war context, he talked about the examples he gave right after were too late in preparing, too late in grappling Bering's intentions, too late in securing allies, etc. But if you apply that to a climate adaptation context, which we must avoid being too late on, of course, then we can't afford to be too late in leveraging the creative solutions young people can create if we're given a chance to. We can't be too late on getting our brightest, most capable minds to decision-making spaces. And we can't be too late on having youth in a, getting youth in position to attack the issue on the attack the issue of climate change alongside adults from all angles together. And fortunately, I'm in a position where through my nonprofit, I can over time lead through meaningful action to address this problem. So definitely looking forward to that.
So you have talked a lot about solutions and implementing them. So what are some solutions that are related to climate education?
Yeah, in no particular order, I would say that it goes as follows. I think one would be teaching the promising potential of the solutions in an empowering, positive tone. One doesn't inevitably, of course, bring forward climate anxiety. I think the UK based charity Climate Science, so like the words climate science, but without the space in the middle, climate science, their approach to it with their children's books and online courses is a great role model to follow on that front. I think encouraging civic engagement is very key. So that means write to elected officials, testify at utility board meetings, which I've heard a lot more fossil fuel lobbyists go to than young people, unfortunately. Getting involved with the youth and climate orgs and initiatives, etc. And then also referring back to what a statistic I mentioned earlier about teachers not feeling like they're able to teach about these subjects, teacher retraining as needed. I think also meaningful group project-based learning would go a long way for the reasons that I sort of already mentioned. And another solution that I've seen mentioned multiple times by other organizations working on this issue is introducing climate into existing subjects. It was called for by Teach the Future. It was called for by, I'm not sure if you're familiar, the Youth for Climate Manifesto, which was Youth for Climate was a international youth climate summit that happened last September, prior to COP, and the 400 delegates, roughly two from each country, created this manifesto document outlining their demands for that they handed off to the pre-COP ministers back last fall. And some other ones I thought of were putting significant emphasis on teaching emissions reduction solutions. This isn't a knock on other aspects of the issue, like loss and damage or environmental justice or whatnot, but it's for the same reason that governments everywhere must use more political capital on the issue. Climate change, from an emissions standpoint, is a very thorny issue that's not going to go anywhere without substantial direct intervention, you know? So, and then I think another solution that I have, which is, it's in alignment with a key distinction I want to mention here, highlight here, which is that education and schooling are not the same thing. They're not always the same thing. So regarding that, supporting and publicizing non-school-based initiatives to promote climate education, such as what climate science is doing, such as, for example, rolling out the climate policy resource stockpile at scale and whatnot, supporting those initiatives will be key. And it matters because although education and schooling are not necessarily the same thing, they can and should still need to complement each other and not be mutually exclusive. So for example, like I've learned all my clinical knowledge, as I might have mentioned earlier, up to this point, without any help from college or high school. But most of my age, I think, still probably learn the majority of their knowledge on these type of topics through school. So it needs to be options for expanding one's climate education on policy or technology or whatnot just needs to be available at scale through both means. And the final thing is in regards to college specifically, like the topic that I mentioned before, I would personally like to see climate be added to pre-existing general education requirements in high school and college, because I personally seen, like I said before, I've done research on the subjects. I personally seen a lot of climate of college degree requirements. And some of them include stuff like theology or like physical education, or the world, some of the more like common ones for clear reasons, pretty understandable reasons, like writing or literature or languages. But I personally have yet to see one single college have climate as a general educational requirement, which is kind of wild and not in a good way. So, and I think also there needs to be efforts towards thoroughly removing all funding barriers to expanding at scale climate education, that is. And last but certainly not least, something I think I oversaw when I was looking into the Youth for Climate Manifesto, more outdoor education, not everything being so classroom or textbook based, as in connection to nature is important for learning about the subject. And from a personal standpoint, I always find it helpful to remember like what I and others are really fighting for.
On that note, from Ruping, that's all we have for this episode. We continue talking about the youth and their education in the second part of this episode, moving on from the question. So check out part two, which will be released with this episode. Check out Climate Ingenuity at Climate Ingenuity. And thank you for listening to this week's episode.